Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Good morning again. It's good to see each and every one of you here today, both here and on Zoom. I also want to acknowledge this new podium. Thank you, Tejin. I don't want to break it on its first day. I don't know how I would, but new equipment here. I'm going to talk this morning about studying and reflecting on sutras and practicing with words and letters. So I'd love for you to just take a moment and maybe do a check-in. The minute I say Dharma study or reading sutras or what comes up for you, what does that feel like? I wanted you to do that because, you know, we get a lot of different messages in Mahayana Buddhism about studying sutras. You know, in one flavor, we're highly encouraged. The Lotus Sutra says to hear even a single word, to hear even a single word of the Lotus Sutra means that prediction of our Buddhahood is certain. Just one word. The Perfection of Wisdom says reciting even four lines will produce a merit far surpassing the giving of one's body or treasures. Pretty optimistic. In Chan, the flavor changed a little bit. We got a different flavor that kind of warns against relying on sutras. What did we just chant this morning? Just to portray it in literary form is to stain it with defilement. One of our Dharma cousins in China, his name is Daishan, on the morning after his enlightenment, took all of his sutras, all of his commentaries, piled them up into the courtyard of the temple and set them on fire. He said, even if you understand 1,000 sutras, it's all like a single hair in the vast sky. You know, another text that's really important to us in Zen is the Denkaroku. It's the transmission of the lamp, transmission of the light. It's filled with stories that emphasize the direct transmission, right? We say these every time we chant the Fukan Zazengi, triggered by an awakening with a finger, a banner, a needle, or a mallet, affecting realization with a whisk, a fist, a staff, or a shout. That direct transmission. What happens in the moment between teacher and student? It's a foundational teaching. I would say it's a belief even in Zen. The Shobogenzo, we're going to talk about that a bit today. In English, that translates as treasury of the true Dharma eye. And Dogen is referencing the first story in the Denkaroku here. It's the transmission story between Shakyamuni and Mahakashapa. When the world honored one, held up a flower, and blinked his eyes, Kashapa cracked a slight smile. The world honored one said, I have the treasury of the true Dharma eye, the sublime mind of Nirvana, and I trust it to Mahakashapa. So, for some time, I had some tension around this because here you have Dogen who takes a piece from that story, the wordless transmission between Shakyamuni and Mahakashapa, and says, yes, I'm going to make that the title of all the words of my magnum opus about the Dharma. It's kind of tricky to resolve. Is that some statement of authority that Dogen thought he had it more figured out than everybody else? He was certainly trying to establish what he called the true Dharma in Japan. He said it hadn't happened yet. He'd been there 500 years, but it hadn't happened. He wanted to bring the true Dharma. Sometimes I've thought it might be a joke. Like Dogen actually loves puns. If you study him, probably not that. But he puts the words next to the wordless, and he shows that there's no opposition there whatsoever. There's no opposition whatsoever between the words and that direct transmission. Sometimes we feel drawn into the vast and particular that the sutras describe, And other times we need to notice our attachments that hinder us when we rely on those same words. There's no opposition. Both are skillful means. You know, when I consider our practice here at Dharma Rain, I think I can say confidently that we like words and letters. We do. You might have heard the line that, you know, if you want to know what's important to someone, just look at their calendar. Okay? Look at the Dharma Rain calendar. There's a study group reading Kyogen's teachings. Seminary was studying Dogen this year, or this term. Wednesdays are spent with Koin studying the foundational teachings. We have a wonderful rack of words and letters in the back of the room that gets wheeled over every Sunday from our room of words and letters across the courtyard. That feels right to me. You know, the seminary program was established here because there was a realization that a broader portion of the Sangha needed a shared understanding of key texts and key histories. That's how we were going to strengthen our base here, from the few to the many. I'm going to offer something that might sound a little bit bold, but I'm going to say that as Zen gains a stronger foothold in the West, I would offer that collectively, not each one of us individually, but collectively, we might need to lean into words and letters. We're not living in a culture that's had hundreds of years of Buddhist context to it. Studying it is important. Figuring out what it means to us next here is important. Dogen's primary koan was, if we're already enlightened, why is there a need for practice? Dogen answered it for himself by saying that one exists within the other. There's no separation between practice and enlightenment. I learned recently there's a Japanese term for this. It's called ichi-nyo. It means one reality. So sometimes when we talk about how Dogen will just put words next to each other, and we're like, what are those two? What is that? Why are we putting robe next to Dharma? Why are we putting practice next to realization? He's trying to tell us there's no difference between any of these things. There's no separation. There's a second thing I learned at a recent Dharma class that I think fits here too. We talk a lot about practice and realization. It's a part of a teaching, though, that's a longer chain of causation. And it's actually a teaching that goes back all the way to the Indian Sutras. In Japanese, the line of thought is mon, shi, shu, sho. In English, they translate as hear, think, practice, realization. So we hear the teachings, we consider those teachings, we practice with them, and then we observe the results, and we do it again, and again, and again, and again. We could also translate that as study, reflect, practice, and verify. This longer chain puts study and reflection right next to practice and verification. When this was explained in the class I was in, suddenly seeing the whole chain for me was another way to see the wholeness that comes from the effort of studying sutras. 3 years ago, I helped start a group here at Dharma Rain that's focused on studying the Shobo Genzo. Following the pandemic, I wanted more Dharma. I wanted more Sangha in my life. I wanted wise friends and sutra scrolls. This phrase, wise friends and sutra scrolls, most people connect it actually with Tendai Buddhism. And Dogen would use it from time to time. He does in the Shobo Genzo. I think what I also wanted in thinking about this idea of studying the Shobo Genzo is I wanted something that had a longer arc to it, something that required devotion. It's the same thing that I observe from the outside of the group that here at Dharma Rain, who every Sunday chant the Avamtaka Sutra after service. You know, so for this new effort, I knew that the Shobo Genzo had, you know, roughly 90 fascicles, depending on the version that you study. So if we studied and covered 10 fascicles each ongo period, at that pace, we had a nice 5-year project ahead of us. A group formed around that interest. At the start, we had 10 to 15 people in that first year. And we probably settled into 7 to 9 people a term that study with us. Like some of the other study groups here at Dharma Rain, we ask each member of the group to lead one of the discussions about the fascicles. We're at the halfway point right now. We're about halfway through the Shobo Genzo. We're about 2.5 years in at this point. And we start again in January. And I want to invite you to come join us. Our only ask is that you have some study and you have some practice. Having gone through seminary is going to be helpful. You need probably that kind of context for the kind of discussions that we have in that group. So if you fit that mold, consider joining us. I want to acknowledge that there's certainly some challenges studying the Shobo Genzo. 13th century Japanese can be a little bit tough in 21st century English. I'm somewhat encouraged when I read in a footnote that the translator doesn't even know what Dogen's saying. Hey, don't feel bad here. Dogen's quoting Indian sutras and Chinese koans, and you know, even more than that, he's alluding to contextual Buddhism that was both contemporary to his time, but that, again, had been baked into the Japanese culture by that point for almost 500 years. Like, his ability to use allusions is easy and clear. It's a little bit harder for us to know all of them, to recognize all of them. He's often writing commentary to both clarify his views for his students, who were both monastic and lay, and refute what he perceived as the incomplete teachings of that time. I would say one of the other challenges is there's really only about 5 complete translations of the Shobo Genzo in English, 4 that we tend to use now. And I know that might sound a lot, but we, and I say we in kind of big quotation marks, in the West haven't really come to agreement on some of the words and language that we're going to use to try to represent the inexpressible. So what do we do when we don't understand or when study and reflection feel hard? There's a story in the Platform Sutra about a young monk named Fata who comes to visit Huineng, the 6th patriarch of China. He's in our ancestral line. He's one of the people who gets one of those extra strikes. His Japanese name is Daikan Eno. Fata arrives saying that he recites the entire Lotus Sutra daily, every day. And he's been doing it for 7 years. And he says to Huineng, I don't get it. He describes himself as bewildered, and he comes seeking wisdom. He says, what might you offer me? Huineng says, Fata, the Dharma penetrates the depths, but not your mind. The sutra doesn't have any questions. It's your mind that has questions. You search for true meaning with the confused mind, but I uphold the sutra because I practice true mindfulness all my life. I've never been able to read, but if you read the Lotus Sutra to me once, I will understand it as soon as I hear it. I love this line. There's a person in our study group who from time to time will say, the fascicle doesn't have any questions. Remember, it's your mind that has the questions. One of Huineng's defining feature was he was illiterate, couldn't read. And he's one of the most important teachers in our lineage. So take that to heart. It's not about being able to understand the symbols on the page. So, you know, Huineng does what he does, and he says, he gives a summary of the Lotus Sutra, the stories, the metaphors, talks about the vehicles, the 3, and then the 1. And then he says, when a person's mind has no thoughts, it is fundamentally empty, and still and free of false views. This is the greatest of all causes, which occurs when you aren't confused about the inside and the outside, when you're free of dualities. If you're confused about the outside, you're attached to forms. If you're confused about the inside, you're attached to emptiness. To be free from form amidst forms and to be free of emptiness amidst emptiness, this is when you're not confused about the inside or the outside. Once you understand this teaching, your mind will develop in an instant. So there, that should sound familiar. We again chanted a version of that today. Sounds a lot like the Wisdom Sutra or the Heart Sutra. I think when we're confused, we think we're supposed to automatically understand the sutras, like it's a requirement. Maybe it's a problem with the translation, we think. If I track down this koan story, then I'll have what I need. I just need to read one more commentary, and then it will make sense. These are the stories I tell myself. All that grasping is a small self. All we're doing is creating separation between us and the sutra. I think it's the same for us when we deny the sutras. I don't need that. Oh my God, I hate the repetition in the Pali Canon. The koans don't have any real answers. I don't ever know what they're talking about. Doesn't make any sense. Huineng is just saying, bring the same intention that we bring to Zazen. We should bring that same intention to Dharma study. Bring the same emptiness. Bring the same mindfulness. Or maybe study and reflection is equally a part of Zazen and Sanzen and the entirety of our practice that is our life. I don't know how many times I've been told by my teacher and other teachers that you just need to soak in it. Just soak in it. Just come to some Sundays. Wednesday nights are pretty good too. Just soak in the forms of the practice. It's true. It's true. I didn't include you. Yes. Have faith in that. And I mean that part seriously. I think we can have faith in that. I think it holds true as much for the words and the letters. I'm wondering how many of you have seen the movie Arrival with Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner. Yeah, so I see some nods. The Amy Adams character is a linguist in the movie, and she's asked to figure out how to communicate with beings that have arrived from some other place. Studying sutras feels like that for me sometimes, that I'm studying a being from another place. As she learns this new language, Adam slowly starts to notice that her perception starts to shift. She starts hearing different noises, different sounds. She starts seeing images that she can't quite identify or remember. Are they dreams? Is she hallucinating? Is she becoming psychic? There's all this confusion around her, and then there's doubt. And then there's acceptance and understanding. The language that she's learning operates on a completely different level. The level of complexity and scale, it completely changes her perception of her reality. And I think that when we study and when we reflect, we are using another skillful means to work with our karma. The words and letters begin to change our mind, or frankly, how our whole body perceives reality. But it's not required. The words and letters are not required. It's not required that you understand them. It's not some kind of checklist for to be a good Zen student. It's just another skillful means. It's just another thing that can be helpful. Hold it lightly. Dogen weighs in on this subject of words and letters in his fascicle, Kankin, or Reading Sutras. He says, in the opening to the to the fascicle, he says, practice and realizations sometimes rely on wise friends and sometimes rely on sutra scrolls. He also says, reading sutras and requesting the benefit are the common tools of everyday life. He also quotes the story with Fata and Huineng. And he quotes Huineng and he says, Huineng says, from kalpa to kalpa, the hands never put down the sutra. And from noon to night, there is no time when it is not being read. Dogen adds, it is just from sutra to sutra, never not a sutra.
If you're in the room, please raise your hand and I will bring the microphone to you. Please say your name before you offer your question or comment and hold the microphone close to your mouth so people on Zoom can hear you. If you're on Zoom, you can either type your name or your question in the chat box and Tony will unmute you or read the question for you.
Hello, I'm Daigai. Thank you. It's the first time I've ever thanked someone for a Dharma talk. And don't know why I did it. Anyway. That's not a disparaging remark. So, my friend, studying the sutras or, you know, like something like Shobo Genzo, I resisted that for a while. And what I've noticed is, you know, the more familiar you become, the more you invest in it, the more it's like drags you along, right? It's like there's some kind of momentum that's built that just kind of seems to have happened sort of by, you know, subtly and without any real deliberate decisions by me. And I don't know, that's been an interesting thing. I would say that to people who maybe don't, that don't have an inclination to look at some of this stuff, that it's, there's some momentum that occurs or some point at which it starts to carry you along with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if you have anything to say about that or not.
I think that's true. I think I would allude back to there's a language, if we're going to talk about Dogen, there's a language to Dogen and how he talks. And I think we understand it the more we spend time with it. I gave some advice to someone saying, read it 10 more times. Read it 10 more times. Because I think our experience, and I think this has been our experience, Daigai is one of the folks in the Shobo Genzo study, our experience is that every time we read it, we have a different experience with it. Right? Sutras are not some solid, unchanging thing. Like our relationship to them changed just as our relationship does to meeting people for tea before our Dharma talk. It's no different. I think whatever we can do to narrow that separation between us and that thing.
On Zoom, Patrick says, an analogy that might be helpful. You can read about sex before puberty, but only after will you recognize, understand what you've read about. Study may ease or deepen your understanding or give some perspective as this new reality manifests, but it is no substitute for the reality itself.
I agree. That's why I like knowing that there's a chain, knowing that it all goes together, that study is a part of it, but practice is still right in there. It's not separate from. It just helps with.
This is Genko, and I'm reminded of a letter that I actually got and answered yesterday from an adult in custody. Somewhere here in Oregon. And he said, well, I've been looking for something all my life and I've been running and running away from it. I've been running away from the truth. And then he says, I keep trying various things, meditation and, you know, study and this and that. And nothing seems to help. So what I said to him was, well, first of all, stop running. And second, be aware this is not a quick fix. So the advice to soak in it and to, you know, read it 10 more times is good advice, I think. What I ended up doing was I sent him stuff about the precepts, the study guide and, you know, all of the different stuff that we have about that, and said, just keep at it and keep at it and keep at it, because that's really what it seems to take. I think a lot of times when the sutras make more sense to me, it's after a long time. And I remember Gyokoko saying this, that the first time she read, it was the Avatamsaka Sutra, I think, it made no sense to her at all. And then 5 or maybe 10 years later, she looked at it and went, oh. And that's what I find a recognition there. Mm-hmm. And so that's really, that confirms what you're saying, is that it changes over time. And what is it that changes? It's not the sutra.
Early in my practice, I think maybe a year or two in, I was looking for some way in, and I decided I was going to read the Denkaroku, you know, the Enlightenment stories. They're short, you get a little, you know, little. And I remember telling someone, maybe at a term student retreat, and they were like, did you understand any of it? And I said, no, I don't think so. But admitting that, being honest about that, it's different now.
And something still happens.
Yes.
This is Dinan. I just want to sort of touch on it. If you're thinking about joining the class and you say, well, it's been going for 3 years. I was going to start it originally, but I had conflicts with like seminary and things of this sort. So I joined last year. It doesn't matter. You fit into the stream. It's not like you have to know all the stuff. So if you're worried that you're coming in the middle of something, don't be. We fall into the river and we just keep flowing.
Yeah. Thanks for that.
Hi, it's Reju. I've been regularly reading chunks from the Tenzo Kyokon. It's part of my Tenzo practice. And there's an interesting story about words and phrases in the Tenzo Kyokon. And I'm curious for what you think. Dogen, a young monk, meets a Tenzo and has a conversation in which the Tenzo sort of like, well, you don't really know what you're talking about. But come to my temple and we'll have a whole conversation. And so they end up meeting and Dogen says, what are words and phrases? And the Tenzo says, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then later, Dogen says, that was my understanding, like I got it later. And now I also understand 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
I don't want to add anything to that. I think the Sangha got it.
Yeah. Well, I didn't.
How about now?
Actually, I have a question. So yeah. This is Alice. I think I started reading the Heart Sutra many, many years ago because it's so condensed. And then I got the Lotus Sutra and I choose which chapter I want to read because the first couple chapters is just story. I mean, it's just like a movie, and then I don't read fiction. Now I'm more into Diamond Sutra. It's a little bit more manageable, but I'm just wondering, like, at the beginning, it usually talk so much, like, what's going on, all this people come together, and then why is so important? I mean, even though the Diamond Sutra, I feel like it's the last one third. Sometimes I feel like, can you just give me the clip notes? What do I need to know? I mean, can you comment on this while I'm continue to read sutra?
One of the phrases in our household is that a lot of things can work. A lot of different things can work. And so I hear you saying, I kind of did this and I kind of did that. And no, I can't give you the cliff notes to the Heart Sutra or the Diamond Sutra. What's the challenge?
Yeah, do you feel like those beginning, I mean, how beneficial, I mean, how helpful are they? I mean, like, to read them.
They're all helpful.
I mean, yeah.
I'm Guy. Thank you for your talk. I was thinking about AI because, you know, AI is everything that people are talking about now. And I was thinking, you know, the idea that there's a problem with AI, it seems like the problem is with the intention, right? Because if everything is about intention, I mean, if you're going into the study of sutras with the right intention, then I feel like you're guaranteed success at some point, you know? But if not, then you're pretty much guaranteed failure. And so, you know, if you're thinking that AI is going to become a surrogate brain, well, I don't know.
I guess one of the things I've noticed when I do use tools like that is that they can sound like the real thing. Like the words are kind of put together in the right order because that's actually how the programming works. It's supposed to sound like the thing, but I've yet to have the experience of feeling the thing. Like it sounds like they got close, but to me, the sutras are always a little bit closer.
Well, and the fact that, you know, you have to engage, like it's a activity. You're not trusting an expert, right?
Or you don't know who's telling you that.
Yeah.
I think that sometimes can be a little harder too.
Thank you.
This is Tony. I have a question following on from what Alice was talking about. There's great value in the Cliff Notes version. For me, it goes deeper than that. The storybook bits that I can't quite swallow are not just, it's not just about not comprehending, it's about being actively repelled. I mean, it can raise tremendous skeptical doubt, right? And stop me in my tracks. And that's most serious. I mean, I get about the soaking and, you know, letting it come in, and there are many different ways of expressing all this, but some of them can be too difficult, right?
I feel like I keep giving the same answer. Probably today. Maybe today it's hard. Maybe there's a different flavor that works for you right now. Totally get that. There are so many. The Indian sutras feel different to me than Chan, feel different to me than Dogen, feel different to me than folks writing now commentaries on all of that. Find something that works. Find something that you connect with.
Yeah, but how do I cope with the skeptical doubt? That's the serious part. It's not just that I get that, you know, it's been going for thousands of years. There are many different ways of expressing it. Of course I get that. Not the point. Some of them are genuinely inimical.
I don't know.
Isn't it rather dangerous? I mean, you do not want to raise skeptical doubt in people.
My trust is greater than that.
Yes, that's fair. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Benny.
Sorry, I was just looking at the clock, making sure I wasn't going to get in trouble that way.
So for me, I find sutra study or Dharma study easy individually. I appreciate it studying by myself. But trouble I have is when it comes to expressing it with other people and seeing it like, oh, I didn't quite see it that way, that sort of tension. So that kind of gives me some tension about something like a class. So I was wondering, could you pitch the benefits of being a part of a class?
Okay. I think expressing what it is your understanding is only one part of being a part of that class. I don't think it's the everything. And it might feel like that. It might feel like, oh my gosh, if I show up, this gets very schooly. I read the assignment. I need to be ready for questions from the teacher. And I think that kind of, it puts a set of constraints around what it is I might learn when I'm in that environment. Maybe the requirement, I know there are some nights, and the folks who are in the Shobo Genzo study class know this, there are some nights where people don't say a thing. And usually we'll check in once, be like, you good? And like, I'm good. And that's okay. That's fine. The group continues. I think understanding that, I think there's a progression to being able to understand or express. Right? My bet would also be that you're afraid you're going to give the wrong answer. And I don't know if there's a wrong answer. It's just what you think today. And I think being okay with that is okay.
Okay. Thank you.
My name is Yusatsu. I've been trying seminary off and on for many years, and it never clicked, but I kept trying. In the class, people could say, I have no idea what I just read, and that's fine. Or one person could speak and say what they thought it meant, and then another person will speak and say almost the opposite. And it's not that all that is right or wrong. It's just where you are now, and it's all just okay. And I can just speak from my experience about the skeptical doubt things. Yes, there's a lot of like stuff that I also was like, what? I don't believe that. What? That's not possible. They're just, but that was always in my head. And eventually I was able to get out of my head. And it doesn't make any difference whether I believe it or not, because it's not about what's in my head. It's about what's in my practice. And so it's, I would just encourage, like, just keep trying, because it took me a really long time to even have a concept that reading those things could have some value to my practice. But eventually it did kick in. So just some encouragement there. I hope that helps.
What it makes me think of, and it goes back to Benny's comment and question, is I just remember a story of, is Bukai still here? Yeah, okay. Okay, so I remember being in an early seminary class with Bukai. We were going line by line through the harmony of difference and sameness. And we ran around the room, got to me. Don't remember what I said. And do you know when you get that moment when you know you gave the wrong answer? But the teacher's like, okay. And I went to the next person. And that's an interesting phenomenon too, as you're speaking to, like, how do you work with that? Of course, it was my best understanding of what it was we were working with in that moment. But to also be somewhere, I think it says something about Sangha. It says something about, I think, how seminary operates, how early study groups operate, that there's a lot of space for lots of interpretations. Where in other environments, you know, Dharma doesn't have a yes or no answer to it. It's not one or zero. And so there could, a lot of things can work. Maybe one or two more.
Hi, this is Dio. Thank you for your talk. I read an awful lot of sutras. It's one of my favorite, like, primary methods of engaging with practice. And like, I just kind of wanted to share a little of my experience of that, especially like in response to Alice's note about cliff notes and such. And my relationship with the sutras, like, I think, like, the knowledge that I get from the sutras is like kind of pedestrian. Like, it's like things are connected. Like, there's like really small ideas, but the experience of coming back to them and acknowledging them is important. And reading these stories about people who are just like filled with gratitude for being able to receive the Dharma. And then I think about how, like, I chose to sit down and read, and because of that, I'm experiencing it, and then I'm grateful to that. And Also, these words, they're flowing through my mind and often through my mouth, and they're training me to think in this way. And like, I think that that's the difference for me between like engaging with it as a practice and thinking about it intellectually, because like, I don't find them especially clever or, and I think that's fine. That's my experience.
I think that's fine, too.
Is it time for one more comment? Sukuchu has a comment on Zoom. She says, in my experience, at least 75% of sutra study is studying my response to the sutra. My illumination, frustration, joy, doubt, my karma narratives. What lasts is ephemeral and wordless and shows up unexpectedly over the days.
I like that answer a lot. Last one.
Hi, my name's Julia. I'm wondering, is there a difference between the lack of understanding that someone who has been through seminary experiences and someone in the lack of experience that someone who has not been through seminary experiences?
Hmm. I think on some level, yeah. I think that, like, this might be a, I'll try this analogy. I sort of feel like, I think about how baked in Shakespeare is into our language and culture. Like how fast we use the shorthand phrases from Shakespeare's plays. And there's a lot of that going on in Dogen. Like Dogen's quoting koans that were written 500 years before him. There's something like 150 references to the Lotus Sutra. So if I don't know the Lotus Sutra, I'm missing potentially a lot that's going on. But I think that that's happening on a certain level. I don't think it doesn't mean that there isn't something that's transmitted if I read it without all of that. I would say that seminary gives you just some more context in a way that I think that's helpful.
Would you say specifically for the mind?
For the mind? For the little M mind. Maybe not the big M mind.
Thank you.